Seek back the city for yourself tonight. I'll seek back the city for me. Take back the city for yourself tonight. Whoa, whoa.
Welcome to Third Paradigm, an out-of-the-box think tank about community sovereignty and regenerative economics. We look at how to take back our cities, farmland, and water, our money, production, and trade, our media, education, and culture, our religion, and even our God. We present a people's history of the Bible and a parent's view on how to raise giving kids in a taking world. I'm your host, Teresa Caraggio, broadcasting through Free Radio Santa Cruz, WHCL Hamilton College, Radio Lillooet, British Columbia, and Upstart Radio Online.
I love this place enough to have no doubt. Whoa, whoa.
Welcome to the 34th episode of Third Paradigm, entitled Confusion in the Cosmo Vision. This phrase is taken from a radio interview with Tupac Enrique Acosta called Wars of the Petropolis, from which we'll play an excerpt. Tupac is quoting from the declaration that resulted from the recent summit meeting of the Abya Yala. This was a gathering of 6,500 representatives of hundreds of indigenous nations from 22 countries. They call themselves the Abya Yala, or the Mature Continent, from the time before the invaders came to subjugate those they continued to call Indians, enshrining the ignorance of that misnomer. They are the roots of humanity, those whose communities and connection to a place go back through scores of generations. Their vision also extends forward generations, unlike the Kleenex culture we live in, which regards the forest as resources to be used and discarded like so many dirty tissues. We'll also present the sovereignty news from the other front line in Honduras. Today, in an exclusive interview on Telesur, the multimedia network, President Mel Zelaya announced that he's flying into Tegucigalpa, accompanied by Miguel Díaz-Cotto, president of the UN General Assembly. A second commission is heading for El Salvador, headed by the Secretary General of the Organization of American States, the presidents of Ecuador, Paraguay, and Argentina, and the foreign ministers of Venezuela and Bolivia. Yesterday, 200,000 Hondurans marched to the airport to meet him, with the leaders of international NGOs like Nonviolence International, Code Pink, Global Exchange, SOA Watch, and Rights Action. Zelaya urged Hondurans not to carry weapons, that their weapons are those of truth and democracy. The de facto regime closed the airport early this morning, has thousands of heavily armed soldiers blocking the entrance, and has said that they'll arrest Zelaya if he lands. Snipers belonging to the Cobra Special Swarm Unit occupy the airport control towers with their rifles aimed at the hundreds of thousands of people. The Catholic Cardinal and 11 bishops have come out in full support of the coup and warned Zelaya to stay away and avoid a bloodbath. No one knows what will happen, but we'll provide some background information along with an ending comment about the Free Radio Santa Cruz micro-coup. But first, let's hear two poems by Judy Brown and E.E. Cummings. The music is Remaining Light from God is an Astronaut. Fire. What makes a fire burn is space between the logs, a breathing space. Too much of a good thing, too many logs packed in too tight, can douse the flames almost as surely as a pail of water would. So building fires requires attention to the spaces in between as much as to the wood. When we are able to build open spaces in the same way we have learned to pile on the logs, then we can come to see how it is fuel and absence of the fuel together that make fire possible. We only need to lay a log lightly from time to time. A fire grows simply because the space is there, with openings in which the flame that knows just how it wants to burn can find its way. By Judy Brown, from Leading from Within. Seeker of truth, follow no path. All Paths Lead Where, Truth is Here, E.E. Cummings. That was Fire by Judy Brown and Seeker of Truth by E.E. Cummings. The music was Remaining Light by God is an Astronaut. The poem Fire talks about paying attention to the spaces in between, the breathing space. It makes space itself animate. In some religious concepts or cosmovisions, it's only in relationship that anything exists. The so-called negative space between subjects is really the foreground, like the picture that flips between being a vase or a woman's profile. Judy Brown's poem also speaks to me as a metaphor for social action. It's possible, I think, to pack the logs too tight, fuel it with so much serious attention that you smother it. There needs to be a little bit of dancing in between, openings in which the flame, an animate force that already knows how it wants to burn, can find its way. I remind myself that as important as doing my part is then getting out of the way, trusting in the fire to do its thing. This last week, my daughters and I held our second Food in the Hood, a front yard farmer's market, gourmet deli, and bake sale for global charity. We're doing it every other Thursday throughout the summer to raise money for the Amazonians of Peru and the Hondurans. We're supporting Peru through a local nonprofit called IF that can direct the money to a group called Red Ambiental Loretana, or the Laredo Environmental Network. Their director is an Irish-British Christian brother, Paul McCauley, who is at the top of the list of those who will be arrested if a state of emergency is declared in Iquitos. Everyone else in the group is local, and it includes very strong indigenous participation, especially indigenous youth. Three of their uncles were among those killed in the Bagua massacre. They're a great little group and a direct connection to the region. An important source of U.S. information on the Abya Yala is Tupac Enrique Acosta, who lives in Phoenix, Arizona. He's translated the declarations that have come out of this globally unprecedented indigenous alliance. This is especially important because there are few speakers of Kuna, Quechua, or other indigenous languages available. He was recently interviewed on the Phoenix Jeff Farias show in an episode called Wars of the Petropolis. Let's listen to an excerpt.
The battle in the Amazon is actually a battle for the future of the whole planet. Mm-hmm. It's the front lines. In this sense, what we're talking about is two, they're referred to in the scientific jargon as two forms of cognition related to human society and our relationship to the ecosystems and the ecology of the planet. Mm-hmm. The one system is the extractive model of colonization that has been imposed by force and genocide, and we would also add the concept of terricide, but in particular in this hemisphere, against the indigenous peoples and upon the lands. And the ecological systems of the territories of which the indigenous peoples are a part. The battle in Peru erupted by matter of sequence. It was almost predictable. We had just come out of Peru, having been participating at the end of the last 4 days of May at a continental summit, the fourth continental summit of the indigenous peoples of this continent, Abya Yala. And within the week after the conclusion of that event, the crisis in the Amazon, which had been brewing for 2 months, the conflict over the illegal expropriation and exploitation of the natural resources of that territory by the state government of Peru against the desires, wishes, and rights of the indigenous peoples. The President Alan Garcia order was issued, and the army troops opened fire, and we suffered a number of deaths. The bodies have been collected in the minimum in the areas of three dozen, 30 to 40. But there are suspicions and allegations and video reports that are coming in, filtering in, that state that the number may be much higher, maybe even to the hundreds. So it's an action of genocide perpetrated by the government of President Alan Garcia in implementation of the supposed benefits of a commercial pact between Peru and the United States. It's called the U.S.-Peru Trade Agreement. So here we are once again at the front lines of a battle over the destiny of the planet and our human societies. And the call by the indigenous peoples is a call for respect and recognition for basic human rights, territorial rights included.
So the president of Peru is essentially reacting to trade deals that he has with the U.S. and particularly the U.S. and Canadian interests, mining and natural resources. So he is essentially selling out his own people for foreign interests.
Well, you know, it's a matter of, if you would recall, there was a period in human history where it was assumed and it was implemented by force the concept that the kings had divine right to rule over all human beings. Mm-hmm. And then there was also the King of Kings, which was by way of doctrine established to be the representative of the Vatican and the Holy See. On May 3rd and 4th, 1493, that office of the Vatican issued a papal bull called Inter Caetera. And in that Inter Caetera bull, the doctrine of discovery was given its religious justification and moral argument, so that the royal crowns of Europe at the time, the royal families of Europe, could come to this continent and impose their will and actually implement a pogrom, a genocide that has now 500 years in history. The issue of Garcia is that he is what I would call, we no longer have the divine right of kings in place. That doctrine has been rejected, and now we have the purpose and the principle of democracy. Yet, in the process of the overthrow of the royalties, the families of rule by royalty, direct colonization of Europe in this hemisphere, the transition to republics, the doctrine of discovery was not revoked, and now we have the divine right of states, and this is the position that Garcia stands on. The territorial issue in the Amazon is a position that Garcia would argue that the subsoil rights belong to the state and not to the indigenous peoples, who are the millennial inheritors and protectors of that territory since the beginning of human society. And this is distinct from the situation that we have here in North America, where treaty rights involving indigenous nations and the U.S. government acknowledge that subsoil rights are included in that territorial designation. In the South, this is not the case. And so Alan Garcia's actions, you have seen marches in the tens of thousands in Peru by the civil society who are in opposition to his policies of trying to implement the expropriation of these natural resources in favor of what is not really the Peruvian society, but these, I wouldn't call them multinational corporations. These are supranational corporations. They have no loyalty to any national constituency, whatever, in any part of the planet. They're just out there for the bucks, and come hell and high water, they're going to make their money, and they'll take the natural resources, contaminate the environment. And if there are some indigenous peoples in the way, those are targets of genocide. And this is what we're facing today in Peru.
That was Tupac Enrique Acosta, interviewed on the Jeff Farias Show, Out of Phoenix. Speaking about the divine right of kings, Tupac confirms the role that religion has played in moralizing conquest. Without an ideology that glorifies or sanctifies destruction, people wouldn't go along with it. Later in the interview, Tupac says that Evo Morales has just declared Mother Earth Day, rather than just Earth Day. It's the first step, he says, to acknowledging our sacred relationship to the material world, rather than as a commodity. Jeff says to Tupac that at the heart of the conflict are two entirely different mindsets, one of dominion and one of living in harmony. Tupac agrees and extends it to the relationship between ourselves and the universe. The Declaration of the Continental Congress of the Abya Yala refers to this as a confusion in the cosmovision that's resulted in extractive industries that aren't sustainable and are terricide at the expense of future generations. He ends by calling for a check on the Peru-U.S. Free Trade Agreement and the market forces that are the new religion, the divine right of supranational corporations. More information can be found at nahuacali.org. That's NAHUACALLI. Let's break for Ethan Miller with the invisible hand of the market.
Well, old Adam Smith, he gave us this myth about how the market will self-regulate. But elite business schemes would still just be dreams without the arms of the state. If you wanna know what they mean when they say We're gonna open up your markets for our free trade. Just ask the ghosts of all those who've been killed for refusing to bow down before the dollar bill. The invisible hand of the market is only one of two, wielded by the corporate elite and dressed in red, white, and blue. In one fist an M16 rifle, in the other one a $1,000 bill. If the right fist doesn't get you, then the other one surely will. Cargill, Monsanto, Merck, or Union Carbide, they go by so many names. But for the land and the people destroyed by their greed, the story is always the same. McDonald's requires McDonnell Douglas. United Fruit needed U.S. Marines. The freedom of their market, supported by fascist regimes. The invisible hand of the market is only one of two, wielded by the corporate elite and dressed in red, white, and blue. In one fist an M16 rifle, in the other one a $1,000 bill. If the right fist doesn't get you, then the other will.
That was Ethan Miller with The Invisible Hand of the Market from his In Times of War album. It can be downloaded for free through open source audio at the Internet Archive. Special thanks to Lynn Gary, the host of Radio for All's most popular show, Unwelcome Guest. Along with giving me the link, she remembered fondly when Freak Radio was born and said what a great honor it was for her show to be played on it. Going back to Food in the Hood, our second charity recipient for the summer is Rights Action out of Canada to help Hondurans recover their democracy from the military coup. Since 1998, in the aftermath of Hurricane Mitch, Rights Action has supported and worked with a number of indigenous, campesino, and human rights groups in Honduras. The Civic Council of Indigenous and Popular Organizations, the Fraternal Organization of Garifuna People, and the Committee of Family Members of the Disappeared. Since 2002, they've supported groups that are opposing the environmental, health, and human rights violations caused by the Canadian corporation Goldcorp and their open-pit cyanide leach gold mine in central Honduras. This includes the Syria Valley Enviro Defense Committee and the Center for Torture Prevention. The director of Rights Action, Graham Russell, is one of the people in Honduras now. I've been impressed with their integrity and deep knowledge of the issues. Here are some of the points that they're stressing. 1. Under U.S. law, all military aid has to cease if a government has been usurped by military coup. Obama and Hillary Clinton have paused some of the aid programs that make up the $40 million given annually. But they're still dancing around the issue and acting like it's coup light, debating whether it's a political or military coup, and saying that both sides need to compromise. The U.S. is the only country that's not recalled their ambassador. If someone forced you and your family out of your house at gunpoint, should the police help you negotiate sleeping arrangements? Obama needs to call it what it is, a military coup, and stop giving our money, any of it, to an illegal and immoral faux government. 2. The bombing of the Supreme Court and a pro-coup radio station may have been executed by the coup government itself to give them an excuse to suspend constitutional rights. Sweatshop workers are being forced to take part in pro-coup rallies, supplemented by private security forces and guarded by the army. Meanwhile, members of the resistance are being arrested if there are more than three people together. 3. The Inter-American Commission on Human Rights has taken precautionary measures to protect at-risk people. Those detained include a cartoonist and his 17-month-old daughter, and those forcibly disappeared to unknown locations include journalists for Telesur, Radio Globo, Canal 36, and directors of the LGBT Rainbow Alliance. Radio Progresso is operated by a Jesuit priest whose abduction was only averted by a public demonstration of support. 4. The coup leaders include several well-known human rights abusers trained at the School of the Americas. The general in charge of the coup is the third SOA graduate to depose a Honduran head of state. During a former graduate's rule, two of his SOA underlings tortured and executed two priests, throwing their bodies in a well along with two women and five peasants who were baked alive in bread ovens. This massacre took place on the Los Horcones Hacienda, which was owned by the father of Manuel Zelaya. The SOA used to boast about how many of the school's graduates had become heads of their countries, but stopped after the graduates' undemocratic path to power became better known. SOA Watch and Rights Action are both raising money to help their Honduran partners and defend those illegally detained by the regime. If you want to donate online and not wait until the next Food in the Hood, we encourage you. Drop me a note at Teresa, T-E-R-E-Z-A, at thirdparadigm.org and we'll reserve a plate with your name on it at the next event. At the last one, the high school students played ukuleles and sang until late, then walked the girls back home. I felt like I was in a Jimmy Stewart movie. We'll now break for Poison Trees by the local band Devil Makes Three. Was Poison Trees from the new album Do Wrong Right by the Santa Cruz indie band Devil Makes Three. In this last segment, I'd like to relate the Honduran situation to the conflict here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. So what did Mel Zelaya do? He tried to conduct an opinion poll, a non-binding referendum on whether or not they should vote in November, on whether or not they should convene a committee to write a new constitution that they could then vote on whether or not to adopt. Mel Zelaya isn't a radical, as you can tell by his father's plantation where the SOA killed and tortured. But asking the people what they want is what democracies do. Most human rights groups weren't great fans of Zelaya, who wasn't progressive enough for them. But they're still risking their lives to get him back. It's not Zelaya they're defending, but the people's right to choose. 3 weeks ago, at Free Radio Santa Cruz, I conducted an opinion poll, a non-binding referendum, asking whether listeners and donors should be considered in programming decisions. Should Free Radio Santa Cruz be a democracy in which programmers serve the interest of a respected and participatory audience? Or should it be an oligarchy in which programmers make the decisions for the good of all? If programmers pay dues for all of the bills, I might agree that programmers should call the shots, even if it turned out to be an audio vanity press. But the solicitation of donations, especially with promos touting it as the people's radio, and Amy Goodman saying free radio is your radio, implies a certain obligation, I think. It's applying the slogans of socialism to a government that's actually run by cronyism. The reaction to my poll within free radio was first an attempt to get me thrown off the station, and then a 3-hour attack on my character. It resulted in the censorship of any programmer broadcasting the survey. On the air since, as with the media on Honduras, the question was changed. The right-wing press has focused on Zelaya extending term limits, rather than the fundamental issue of whether he had the right to ask the people what they thought. When I tune in now, even 3 weeks later, I hear programmers using abusive profanities in English against people who are trying to get Spanish off the air, supposedly. I hear anonymous callers whose voices resemble those of programmers who interject the Spanish debate into guest shows. I hear messages on the station voicemail of people offended by the PSA that hasn't played for a month. Of course, PSA is a programmer's term rather than listener survey, which I called it. And when the caller says whose effort he applauds, he starts to say the name of a programmer before he switches it to Free Radio Santa Cruz. But in all of this, the question has been changed. The issue isn't whether Spanish language news should or shouldn't displace English language news. The issue is whether listeners can be asked what they think. Are we a totalitarian government in which everyone needs to toe the party line? Once a decision is made behind closed doors, can no dissent be voiced? In Honduras, the stakes couldn't be higher, and yet people are defending the right to choose, even when the candidate wasn't their first choice. At the station, there's no need to present a united front. No one's life hangs in the balance. We can dissent in a respectful way. Isn't that what free speech is all about? This has been Teresa Caraggio with Third Paradigm. Thanks to Skidmark Bob for editing, production, and sanity checks. Responses and comments can be sent to Teresa@thirdparadigm.org. Our final song is a short little ditty by Chumbawamba called To a Little Radio. Thanks for listening.
A little box I carried in my flight, so as not to break the radio tubes inside me. From house to boat, from boat to train, held tight, so that my enemies could still address me. Right where I slept, and much to my dismay, last thing each night and first thing every day, about the victories, defeats for me. Oh, please do not fall silent suddenly, suddenly.